Good afternoon. Representative, we're going to move a few bills through work session first, so we'll get to that bill in a bit. But I'm losing one of my key members in a few minutes, and I want to make sure he has an opportunity to vote on these bills. I'm calling to order the House Committee on Land Use for Tuesday, April 28th, 2009. Last day for work on House bills. And a lot of the work that we have done so far this session is coming to fruition today, and I want to thank the committee for all of the thoughtful debate and ideas that you have all brought forward. And so we're going to move with a couple of bills that we've talked a lot about already. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2229. This is the bill implementing some of the recommendations made by the Oregon Task Force on Land Use Planning, otherwise known as the Big Look Task Force. We talked about this bill last Thursday, and we're about 10 words away from moving the bill. Representative Hanna identified the changes that would bring, I believe, consensus on the committee for the bill, and they have been incorporated as the Dash 12 Amendment. So I'd entertain a motion.
Madam Chair?
Representative Wingert?
Will you just help me out with where the change is?
The Dash 12 Amendment makes the changes that Representative Hanna put on the record to the Dash 9.
Which are distributed throughout the bill.
They are mostly in on page... Well, a lot of it's deletions, Representative Wingert, so you won't see it because
okay.
It's what's not there
okay.
That matters.
All right. Well, that does matter.
You should have a Dash 12 right here.
We do have a Dash 12 in the pile.
You should have a Dash 12 in the pile.
And it deletes the line on page
6-24.
2 of the amendment. It deleted a line that that used to follow line 7.
Okay.
And that line was relating to conserving farm and forest land.
I remember that. Yes.
And it tightened up the language in the following sub B. And I don't have it in front of me, Representative. And then it deleted a reference to the overarching principles later in the bill.
Madam
but
Chair.
We have had 62 people look to make sure that this amendment does what Representative Hanna said it should do.
And because I believe it does, I would move the Dash 12 amendments to House Bill 2229.
Thank you. Representative Wingert moves the Dash 12 amendment to House Bill 2229. Discussion on the motion. Any objections? So ordered. Now we have a bill. Where do you think it should go, folks?
Through the floor.
I think that means Representative Esquivel has moved to rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means, which the Speaker has approved, and send the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'm there.
Any discussion?
Somebody ought to say something.
Good work.
I think that I probably speak for a number of members of this committee when I say that I am delighted and surprised that we were actually able to create something out of the bill that I believe today will have unanimous support. And I think that besides the hard work of the negotiators and all the people that were involved that deserve thanks, obviously the members of the Big Look Task Force deserve a great deal of thanks for the time and energy they put in to putting us in a position where we had something to start with, and we worked to produce something for them. So I didn't have a big hand on that. I'm not taking any credit for it, but I do want to make sure that the members of the Big Look Task Force are thanked for their efforts. And it turns out it was not for naught, and we will pass a good bill today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks. And Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
I echo my colleague's thoughts on this, but I'd also like to give a special thanks to Representative Garrett for his work. Vice Chair Garrett, I'll be candid with you. I didn't think this thing had a chance. But so be it.
Indeed. Any objections? Representative Wigert called it unanimous. Representative Garrett, would you and your fellow vice chair carry this bill on the floor, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you all. Close that work session. And let's open a work session on House Bill 3225. This is a bill that this committee initiated relating to ballot measure 49 claims from the 2007 ballot, special election ballot. And we have worked not only within this chamber, but collaboratively with Senator Prezonsky, who was one of the co-chairs of the Land Use Fairness Committee, and most notably Mr. Honeycutt and Mr. Stacy, as well as Mr. Whitman, forged a compromise on this bill that is codified in Ms. Ross. Which amendment?
The Dash 7s, Madam Chair.
Dash 7 amendment, which we should have in front of us. I would like to put on the record that the Dash 7 amendment is the amendment that we all talked about. Mr. Honeycutt has pointed out to me that there may be, he's not sure, but there may be an issue with the way the amendment was drafted as it pertains to property owners whose property is within an urban growth boundary. No, within a city, but not within an urban growth boundary.
Attached to the.
Mr. Honeycutt has told me that if, in fact, that language doesn't include the very small, and I think we could probably count them on the fingers of two hands, if it doesn't cover those people, he will work with me and Senator Prezonsky and the department and Mr. Stacy to make it right on the Senate side. Because the amendment as presented represents the agreement that we have all talked about.
May I ask a question, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe the chair knows. Madam Chair, I'm thinking, because I came from city government, how you'd have a piece of property that has been incorporated within the city limits, annexed, and yet it's not in your urban growth boundary. Of course it wouldn't be in your urban growth boundary because you've already annexed it into your city, unless it's an island that has the city has grown past it. Is that the only way this happens?
It's my understanding that this is, if not completely unique, almost unique to the city of Damascus. And it is an artifact of its fairly recent birth as a city.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Flynn.
I know, I see my mayor smiling over there. We've got one, too.
Oh, okay.
So what happened at one point was cities established UGBs, and then in some cases there were some lawsuits, and they had to pull them back in. And then there's some stranded. And Tangent has got quite a few of them floating, laying around over at Tangent. And we had a bill on just one of them in West Salem last time. It didn't get anywhere.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
It is a little bit of a quirk, shall we say. But I believe the amendment, nonetheless, represents the agreement we struck. If there needs to be something to address claimants, and not just that issue, but this is specific to Measure 49 claims, we will work together to make that happen. So I would entertain a motion.
I would move the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill
3225. Okay. Representative Hannah moves the Dash 7 amendment to House Bill 3225. Discussion on the motion. Any objections? Just so people know, this is the amendment that adds the application fee and extends the time period from the 90-day to 120-day. Those are the changes to the amendment that we had been looking at, just so everyone is clear about that.
And
addresses hardship definition and addresses the ability to use the record created at county
records.
Level. Yes. Yes, thank you, Representative Cowan. Those were good additions.
Madam Chair, the county ability to use the county records was apparently in it before, but I managed to not be able to find it in a timely manner.
Is it in there twice now?
Well, no. Okay. That was pointed out to me, thankfully. But, yeah, they just adds one more definition of hardship that deals with a claimant who can't continue to occupy the existing dwelling on the property and simply wants to occupy a new dwelling on the property. And I thank you very much for allowing us to get that in.
You bet. It was a good addition. Thank you. Any further discussion on the motion to amend with the dash 7? Any objections? So ordered.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Representative Wingert, we have a little bit of a detour we need to take.
Okay.
Because the bill has a fiscal impact that is modest, it is between the revenue from the fees and the cost of doing the processing, there's about a net $60,000 to $65,000 cost. And the Speaker has asked that this bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Not with any intention that it die there. And I can promise you that this committee chair will hound them until they bring it out. But the motion, if you want to make it, would be to refer the bill to Ways and Means.
Madam Chair, I'd actually like to move the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 3225.
What are the dash 8 amendments?
Well, everybody has them in their packets, the last page. And it's nothing new to the committee. It is the same issue I brought up before. I believe this is a very good bill, but it is missing one element, and that is a hard and fast deadline for DLCD to deliver on the express lane that has been repeatedly promised, and which, even if it occurs by June 30th of 2010, is about 2.5 years that folks who are Measure 49 claimants have waited. And I think that first of all, what the amendment does is say that after June 30th, 2010, if DLCD has not issued a final order, that your application is automatically approved. I don't do that with the intention or hope that anybody's application is automatically approved. What I hope is that, as we have discussed many times in various meetings and here in the committee, people work well under deadlines. And I think that the Measure 49 claimants who have been waiting and were promised an express lane deserve to have that. And we won't meet again between now, well, we might meet in February, but who knows if we'll actually take up this issue. As a full legislative assembly, we are not intending to meet again before that deadline comes and goes. And I believe that if we were to amend in this deadline, that DLCD would actually issue a final approval on all of them, and so it would be unnecessary. But I do think that we need to give some assurance to Measure 49 and claimants that other than just saying that DLCD will do this, that we put some teeth in this to ensure that their applications are processed. Because even at June 30th, I don't believe that was much of an express lane, but nobody should have to wait a day past that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wingert has moved the dash 8 amendment to House Bill 3225. Representative Garrett.
I do understand the purpose of this amendment, but I would not support it. It may be fully expected that these claims will be resolved before June. What's the date?
December 31.
December 31. But there could be unforeseen circumstances that cause a claim here and there to not meet the deadline. I would be fine with Section 4 of your amendment that calls for a fee to be refunded, but having the claim be automatically approved, I think, goes a step too far. So I would urge that we not adopt the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Let me just add a couple of thoughts. One is, I believe that the amendment is incorrect, and it should have read June 30th. In actuality, this grants DLCD an extra 6 months beyond the deadline that they have promised, which I think makes the amendment even more sellable at this point. But I think to not adopt this is a tacit admission that we don't believe that these, or we think there's at least a reasonable chance that somebody's application is not going to be processed by the deadline. And I think that's unfortunate. I think we should have confidence in what the department told us they would do. And they're going to get a six-month buffer if we adopt this one beyond their own deadline. So I can't see a reason not to support it.
I actually think there are other reasons that someone might decline to support this amendment. And they have to do with an assessment that this incentive, which you propose to incentivize the staff, ends up potentially causing damage or loss to people other than the staff, for example, adjacent property owners or counties and cities. So you have your reasons for advancing the proposal, but the people who oppose it may have other reasons than the ones you've suggested. And I am committed to helping my fellow caucus leader get to an important community event in his hometown this evening. So I promised him he can leave within 20 minutes. And I'd like us to be mindful of that. Representative Esquivel?
Yes, I support this, and I'll tell you why. I've had some clients in there in the queue since November of 2007. They are not young people. And evidently, we don't seem to want to put in some kind of a hurry on this. We've committed to a deadline. Let's keep the deadline. But more importantly, we got to put people's feet to the fire that don't get the job done. So I will be supporting the motion.
Okay. Let's call a roll on the amendment. Motion to amend with the dash 8.
Representative Clem?
No.
Representative Cowan?
No.
Representative Greenlick?
Excused.
Representative Hamlin?
Yes.
Representative Wingert?
Yes.
Vice Chair Garrett?
No.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Yes.
Chair Nolan?
No. Motion fails. Representative Hanna, were you going to make a motion?
I am.
Another amendment?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House Bill 3225 as amended by dash 7. And, Madam Chair, again, you said
it's
got to go to Ways and Means.
It does.
To the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hanna moves House Bill 3225 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion.
Just
Representative Clem.
As the one member on Ways and Means from there, I know that I will remember how strongly we all feel about this in advocating, and we begin our hearings on House bills next week, actually.
Next week.
I feel comfortable in being an advocate there. I'm very happy with the work gone into this bill, and someone who has got a lot of time helping to draft 49 and campaign for it, I think this will get us to a place where we can all feel pretty good about where we're at until June 30th, and we see some closure.
We will resolve all of that, yep. Any other discussion? Any objections? Motion carries. I'm going to take about a 5-minute recess so we can collect some papers on House Bill 3099. So let me close that work session and we'll take a 5-minute recess. business and open a work session on House Bill 3099. This is Representative Clem brought this bill forward after work during the interim to try to make some modest simplifications in exclusive farm use statute. They are more and more modest all the time. We have two amendments to this bill, at least two to consider. Representative Clem, do you want to make a motion on an amendment?
Sure. Madam Chair, move the dash four amendments.
Representative Clem moves the dash four amendment to House Bill 3099. This is an amendment that, again, has been touched by many hands, representing a lot of work from the Farm Bureau and the concrete and aggregate folks and 1,000 friends and cities and counties and lions and tigers and bears and everybody.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Discussion on the motion. Realtors and I think home builders were involved in this, too.
Yes.
Seeing no discussion, are there objections to the dash four? Motion carries. Representative Clem, did you have another motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the dash five amendments. House Bill 32225. Wait, 3225.
Representative.
3099. I'm sorry, I was still excited about the measure.
Representative Clem moves the dash five amendment to House Bill 3099.
Remember my bill.
Which removes the requirement for individual notification. This, again, has been worked out with many of the interest groups and the department. Discussion on the motion. Objections? Seeing none? Motion carries. With the dash five amendment, we do not have a fiscal impact statement from LFO. The purpose of the amendment is to remove the requirement to provide to mail notices, which we believe eliminates the fiscal impact of the bill and the dash four amendment. Just to have it on the record, Mr. Whitman, I'd like to get your department's assessment of the fiscal impact on you to implement this bill if we pass it with the dash four and dash five amendment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. With the dash five amendments removing the requirement to provide notice of the changes in statute, the duties of the department with regard to this bill would be a simple, what we call a housekeeping rule, to incorporate the statutory changes into our what are called Goal 3 rules so that they mirror the statute, and that is a minimal fiscal on our part.
Thank you. Any questions of this witness? Thank you, Mr. Whitman. Because we do not have the official piece of paper, though, the chair requests that the rules be suspended in order to allow the committee to send this bill to the floor absent an official fiscal impact statement. That motion is oral and allows no debate. So, are there objections to the motion to suspend the rules? No. So the motion to suspend the rules carries. Representative Clem.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3099 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Representative Clem moves House Bill 3099 as amended with the dash 4 and dash 5 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion? Objections? Seeing none, motion carries. Representative Clem, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
My poor L.A. Dan, who had to sit through 50 hours worth of work groups and wants to, but he can't, so yes, I'll be glad to.
Thank you, Representative. We'll close that work session, and we have a couple other bills, but Representative, safe travels.
Madam Chair, thank you.
That's it.
Before you go, though, the chair requests unanimous consent to allow to suspend the rules to allow Representative Greenlick to vote on House Bill 2229 and House Bill 3225. Objections? Seeing no open work session on 3225, Representative Greenlick?
Aye.
Close that work session. Open work session on 2229, Representative?
Aye, and thank you very much.
You're welcome. Close that work session. Okay. Now, thank you all.
Thank you.
Representative, we'll let you know if we need you.
Thank you.
Okay. We have three other bills remaining on our docket. Can I take a 1 minute recess in place? Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 3054. Representative Garrard.
Maybe we can find a relating clause.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Bill Garrard, District 56, Southern Klamath County. The reason I'm here representing House Bill 3054 is because Oregon still has many land use problems that could partially be solved with the passage of this bill. The bill before you was House Bill 3483 back in the 2005 session, and it passed out of our land use committee on a 5-2 vote. It is interesting to note that the only three members of that committee that remain in the legislature today are the chair, myself, and Representative Greenlick. And the chair and Representative Greenlick were the two no's on the committee at that time. That was just a little bit of trivia, Madam Chair.
You're trying to help this go along.
This bill's already dead.
Yes.
Take that dog out and shoot it.
This may become an interim work assignment for this committee, though, okay. Representative Wingert, so pay attention.
You're sharing. This bill was a Farm Bureau-sponsored bill at that time, and
had little opposition. The bill before you today is virtually the same bill. However, it is 100 pages long, and any bill that's 100 pages long in land use does usually take just a little bit of time to review. It has been said over and over and over again, when it comes to a discussion of Oregon land use laws, one size doesn't fit all. And that's what this bill was about then, in 2005, and that's what it's still about today. It carries forth the same concept and many of the same conclusions that have been offered to this committee by the Big Look Committee and the Big Look Task Force. Move most land use decisions back to local control with oversight by state authorities. The Land Conservation and Development Commission is the state agency obviously responsible for developing statewide planning goals and the implementation of administrative rules. While the goals are statewide, not every goal is applicable to each jurisdiction within our state. For example, the goals and rules pertaining to coastal issues are clearly only applicable to counties and cities along the coast. However, rules affecting urbanization and public facilities apply throughout the state. A repeated criticism of the state's land use planning system has been the real or perceived one-size-fits-all approach of a number of planning issues that have resulted in the development of rules which do not take into consideration the unique characteristics inherent to different regions around the state. House Bill 3054, as I mentioned, is 100 pages in length. The original bill back in 2005 was 177 pages long. So we have pruned down the original bill, but have made no substantive changes. House Bill 3054 establishes five regional land use commissions. One region includes the counties that comprise the general Portland metropolitan area. A second region consists of the coastal counties. A third region covers southern Oregon. A fourth region consists of eastern Oregon. And the fifth region constitutes the counties within what is referred to as the Willamette Valley. Each regional land use commission would be responsible for adopting, revising, or amending any rules necessary for the implementation of statewide planning goals within the specific region. In passing any rule changes, the regional land use commissions would take into consideration and allow for diverse administrative and planning capabilities of the local governments, access economic and property impacts, and assess any alternative actions that might be available. The chair of each regional commission would become one of the directors of a revised LCDC Board of Directors. The measure amends numerous sections of statute to change references to reflect the decreased role of LCDC in its current form and to include the role of the new regional land use committees. Excuse me. The new state LCDC would maintain its director and some of its staff. Richard, you can sit a little easier now, to assist the five regional land use commissioners. This new LCDC would have final say and approval or disapproval of any land use decision made by any of the five regional commissions. The seven members of the five commissions would be appointed by the governor. The bill specifically allows the governor to appoint without regard to any specific organizations. But each regional board must have one member who shall or has been an elected city or county official. So that's basically it. It's House Bill 3054. It carries on with what we believe was the intent of the Big Look Committee, and that is to regionalize. Five sizes come a whole lot closer to fitting all than one, when one size doesn't fit all. So I would ask committee members to consider this rather bold and not really a new look, but an old look that would set this bill into the process of reuniting the state of Oregon when it comes to land use planning. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions that I'm capable of.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions for the good representative from Klamath Falls? Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm intrigued, Representative Girard, by the statement you made at the very end about uniting us. And I think there is something interesting about the idea that dividing us unites us. And I think what I heard from your statement on the bill and the concept is that by giving people local control, they buy into the larger community more readily, and they feel like they, you know, by treating them as an equal and giving them an ability to have some control over their own lives, own communities, that they, in this case, feel like they're more a part of the state, and they that you get better cohesion by allowing that kind of regional approach. Seemed to be a little bit of a tension or an oxymoron in that statement, but I actually thought there was a great deal of wisdom in it.
Madam Chair, Representative Winder, coming from you, that's a real compliment, and I deeply appreciate it. And I concur with your views.
Thank you. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill that I basically talked about when we first started on this land use committee, and that was I always felt that we needed to have people work within the system but have their own local way to grow, because I've always felt that, you know, we do, and I know I've heard flexibility, but I really know different. And what I mean by that is that I'll give you an example that really I've yet to get a full understanding of why that we have class 1 through 4 soils in the Willamette Valley, and yet you get outside the Willamette Valley and we have 1 through 6. Why is that?
More land.
Well, I mean, are we just there to stop? What are we doing? So, anyway, I think this is a great approach, because I've always felt that LCDC needed to have a broad-based policy base only, and that local jurisdictions had a flexibility to grow the way they needed to grow according to their community needs underneath the umbrella of our 19 goals. And I think this is a step in the right direction, and I applaud you for bringing it forward a second time, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I have a few more witnesses to speak on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for
the Representative.
Courtesy of allowing this public discussion of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Three witnesses on this bill: Mickey Killingsworth, Dave Honeycutt, and John Chandler. Ms. Killingsworth, how are you?
Tired. But probably not as tired as you. I'm Mickey Killingsworth from the record. I'm a sheep producer in Central Oregon and Madras, which would be in Region 4, according to this bill. I oppose this bill because, from what I can tell from reading through the 100 pages, it's another layer. And I keep hearing everybody talking about inflexibility. And I don't know what happens in everybody else's county, but in Jefferson County, we have a comp plan, and the citizens are very involved in their comp plan. And it's updated, and we work through things, and DLCD has given exceptions to Jefferson County and to the city of Madras for expansion. So I always up here, or watch on internet, on my computer, these hearings, and I think, is Jefferson County just unique? Maybe we are. But as a person, everyday person who doesn't get paid to be here, let me tell you, this is another layer. So we go from our county planning system to the next layer of regional people, and then that goes back to the directors appointed for LCDC. So now we've created another layer. Probably the money would be better used to hire staff, so there's more trained, capable staff to help the counties and cities to work with DLCD than it would be to have five regions. And that's all I have to say as a real person that works through this.
Thank you. I appreciate your taking the time to pay attention to this. Mr. Honeycutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of House Bill 3054. I liked this idea when Representative Garrard was the chair of this committee. I still like it. There's a technical drafting error in Section 94 on page 91 that needs to be fixed. Just kidding. I haven't read Section 94, sub 6, but the bill is a good bill, and I believe brings us closer. We've always believed, excuse me, that there are 36 perfectly good regions in this state that could conduct land use planning and would do an absolutely bang-up job if given the opportunity. But on the other hand, this bill is a significant improvement over the current system, and so we would hope that it moves forward. But in the chance that it does not, we would hope that this would be something that could be looked at during the interim. And we would be very happy to work with Representative Garrard and whoever else is interested on this bill in the interim if the committee decides not to move this bill forward this session, which we certainly hope they do. So anyway, thank you for the opportunity, and we're very supportive of the bill.
Thank you. Mr. Chandler?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. With all respect to Representative Garrard, we don't like the bill any better now than when he brought it forward, or for that matter, when Speaker Lundquist brought it forward, or Andy Anderson, state rep from down south in Oregon, a while ago before that. It's not a new idea, and I don't like the idea of five LCDCs because one seems ample, even though I love them to death. I think the idea behind the bill of looking at better ways to implement the land use planning program, as Representative Garrard stated, if you build on the work of the Big Look Task Force and take the next step in, I think that makes a whole lot of sense. We'd be very supportive. Splitting the state up into regions and having an extra layer of governance and an extra layer of political infighting and all has never struck us as a good idea. Absolutely supportive of the need to be more local in our decision making. Not wild about this approach to it. I do think it's an issue that commends itself to further study and analysis, and I wish Representative Wingard, Mr. Honeycutt, and Representative Garrard the very best of luck on the task force. I'm unfortunately busy on those times for their meeting, but would normally love to participate. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. Questions for the panel? None? Okay. All right. We close the public hearing on House Bill 3054. We have one bill left on the agenda, House Bill 2819. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2819. Do we have? So we'll call Andy Anderson, Ted Miller, and Ronald Sturba.
Boost my
attitude. Go ahead in whatever order you like. Please identify yourself for the record.
I think we ought to go by seniority here.
Chairman and the committee on land use, I'd like to present two testimonies, one for our Oregon Flying Farmers and also one from the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. The executive director for the OAA was not possible to be here. He's out of state at this time, so I'd like to read his testimony as well, representing the Agricultural Society. And you should have copies of those there.
Sir, could you give your name, please?
Andy Anderson.
Thank you.
Just not the same one that just a minute ago was
no.
trying to introduce a bill on regional planning.
No, that was that's another person.
Okay.
That's the other Andy.
Well, fortunately, we have lots of Andy Andersons in Oregon because it's a lumber company and lots of loggers from the Scandinavian area.
Yeah.
I appreciate the opportunity to testify for the Oregon Flying Farmers in favor of House Bill 2819. The Oregon Flying Farmers is a chapter of the International Flying Farmers, and my name is W.L. Andy Anderson, and I'm Vice President of the Oregon Flying Farmers and reside at 803 Cessna Street in Independence, Oregon. And I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 2819, which relates to land use planning in the vicinity of public use airports in Oregon. Our Oregon Flying Farmers are concerned with the possible development of residential housing, other developments near airports that can cause the airport to be closed or curtail operations. The National Airplane Owners and Pilots Association, the AOPA, have determined there is one airport being closed in the nation every 2 weeks. Those closures are primarily due to urban sprawl of high-density residential housing near airports. As pilots, where we fly is determined by the availability of destination airports. The closure of Cards Field in Dallas and the airport at Sutherland are examples. Several other airports in Oregon are now being threatened with this pressure of urban development. Lebanon, Crestwell, and Cottage Grove are examples. Our aviation community wants to be proactive by encouraging planning around airports to maintain their continued operation. House Bill 2819 provides a 3-mile radius around the 97 public use airports to encourage local planners to consider the airport as a vital economic and transportation asset and plan accordingly. Local planners will be required to consider the public use airport planning area at the next periodic review. Funding for planning to local governments is presently available under the airport planning rules. House Bill 2819 also provides a description of an air park, a residential air park, it should be, to be added to Oregon revised statutes. Air parks have proven to be one of the most supportive developments near airports. Independence Air Park, with 210 lots at Independence State Airport, is an example, which produces $180 per year per lot, or $13,800 to Oregon Department of Aviation, owner of the airport, for support and maintenance. Aurora State Airport is another airport with through-the-fence access to help support the airport and provide added services. One of the threats to airports posed by Measure 37 and 49 is land next to airports for possible high-density housing, which is one of the primary reasons airports have been closed or have curtailed operations. House Bill 2819 will not allow counties and cities to grant waivers, ORS 195.3000, for zoning within the 3-mile airport planning area. Protection of our public use airports is essential for Oregon to provide future economic growth and provide air transportation for all pilots to use public use airports. I thank you for your consideration of House Bill 2819, and I ask for your support. I'd also like to read into the record the testimony of Scott Ashcombe, the Executive Director for the OAA. The Oregon Agricultural Alliance is a statewide organization of production farmers and nursery operators. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 2819. House Bill 2819 relates to land use in the vicinity of airports. The bill was the idea of myself representing the Oregon Flying Farmers, and I'm also on the OAA board. We see a need to encourage local government planners to enhance the viability of public use airports by recognizing the compatibility of farming and public use airports. The bill recognizes that agricultural land uses in areas within the 3-mile radius of the end of public use airport runways should be protected by planners for exclusive farm use. Residential development in these airport planning areas is not compatible with airport use except for residential airparks, which are defined for the first time in the Oregon Revised Statutes. Planners will plan for residential airpark development only within 300 feet of a public use airport runway. It should be boundary. And only for airports located within or adjacent to an urban growth boundary. Counties and cities will not be allowed to grant Measure 49 waivers, ORS 195.300, for any lands within the 3-mile radius of the center point of the end of the runways of public use airports. In other words, within the public use airport planning area. There are 97 public use airports in Oregon. Calculating the acreage in each airport planning area as a circle 6 miles across with an area of 28.27 square miles, the number of acres protected would be 2,742 square miles. Planners would be required to consider public use airport planning area at the periodic review. In urban growth boundary expansions in future, next or in need for residential airparks and public use airports planning areas would be accomplished during under the so-called 2709 hierarchy before consideration of farmland for inclusion in the UGB. Funding for planning is available through local governments from existing funds. Please contact the Oregon Aeronautics Department for information about these funding. Thank you for your consideration of House Bill 2819. We ask for your support. Respectfully submitted, Scott Ashcom, Executive Director.
Thank you very much. Sir?
My name's Ted Millar, and I live at 14355 Kyle Road in Aurora, and I own the South End Air Park at the Aurora Airport. It's important that all airports are considered a vital part of the national transportation system, and airports are a vital link for all the rural communities to attract and sustain economic development. And in these times, it's very critical. It's important that the airport needs to grow and develop are considered when the 20 and 30 year supplies of available land are considered and how they're going to be used, so that the needs of the public transportation can be met. We also support the residential air park portion of the bill. And that's all I have.
All right, thank you. Mr. Sterba?
Good afternoon, Chair and committee. Excuse me, it's the first time in a hearing room for me, but I have been on a quest myself, and my point today is about planning. My name is Ron Sterba. I live here in Salem at 520th Street Northeast. I'm a pilot of 37 years, and I enjoy flying at night. And this quest that I went on that started about 6 years ago was brought on about the proliferation of light. In Oregon, we're almost a pioneer with airports because the expansion hasn't taken over the airports like it has in other parts of the country. My question about all the bright lights around the airport is why? Why are these lights here? There's got to be a reason. I mean, when I come into the airport at night, I thought, gosh, I got to look for these little runway lights. And all these bright lights are around the airport. And I thought, where's the planning? So I thought, well, let's talk to the airport administrator, City of Salem. I went to the airport advisory board meetings and found out that there was nothing they could do outside the city airport boundary. So I went to the division, Oregon Division of Aviation, at their land use compatibility laws and looked it up. And under Appenditure E.070, subparagraph B and C, there talked about lights and glare. And I thought, bingo, I got it. I'm going to that committee and I'm going to let them have it. I went to the committee, the Airport Advisory Board committee, only to have the airport administrator said, that's not going to work. I said, why not? He said, because it's a guideline. It's not in planning. So if local officials don't want to adhere to it, they all have to. And I said, well, how about the safety of myself and other pilots coming into the airport if we can't find the airport? So I thought, well, let's dig into this farther. So I went into the FAA records, 139.311, and did in fact talk about lighting and interference with airport lighting that interfered with the approach of aircraft coming into an airport. Now, I want to tell you, as a pilot, sometimes it is really tough to come in with low-hanging clouds over the airport or over the city with the ambient light that points up or the ambient light that goes up and lights the base of the clouds. If I'm coming through the clouds, I am instrument-rated, and you're looking for a dark spot on the ground with lights about every 150 feet, trust me, it's really hard. And so with this, I went armed back to the Airport Advisory Board Committee and said, hey, gosh, this 139.311 is the one that talks about it. And I was told, well, it does and it doesn't. Why? Because it pertains to air carrier operations. And I said, well, isn't that wonderful? Guess what we're getting here at Salem. I want the pilots and the passengers to be as safe as they can. So working with city staff, Vicki Woods and the mayor, Janet Taylor, and Mike Kuntz, the acting administrator, while our administrator was in Iraq, helped me come up with a language. And in the copy you'll see in the Mill Creek Industrial Area, on page 4 does, in fact, have added the planning for lights to prevent the proliferation of light. Now, the state of Arizona has a light statute that talks that you will project light strictly down. You won't project it to the neighbors. You can't see the light source. And they have great planning around the airports, which I ended up spending many hours with the Scottsdale Airport manager and their planning staff. And I thought, well, why can't we have that? This only protects the community and makes flying into Salem safer at night. So I was able to get into the language, and you'll see it on page 4, the Mill Creek Industrial Area, about proliferation of light. My point here is that in Salem, we have a instrument landing system, a precision instrument landing system that only comes in from the south area of the city, the southeast. It comes in, and from the north, we don't have a precision approach, and that means that the guidance coming down in an angle doesn't exist. So what the pilots have to do, if the wind is blowing out of the south, your Delta Airlines, Allegiant, United, whatever it is, they come in on the instrument landing approach, but they have to break it off over Turner and head to the east, and it's called a circle-to-land approach. This 2 to 3 miles out from the airport is critical because you're adding all of this ambient light up. And again, I wanted to make it safe. So when he talks about 3 miles out, for a large jet airliner covering 3 miles in 45 seconds, 160 miles an hour, 180 miles an hour, it's vital that we do have good planning. And so, in closing, it took me 6 years to get to where I am today to speak to you without a shudder in my voice, only because I have a passion for flying. That we get planning in the state, it's a good thing. It really is. And I can't do the whole job myself, but I've sure gone to a lot of meetings and spent a lot of time in something I have belief and passion with. And in closing, as a pilot of 37 years, I'm building my own aircraft. I like things that are close to perfect, the way they should be, to guarantee safety. And that's what I'm talking about here is safety. And I'll close in saying that when was the last time you drove in the fog with your bright lights on, or you went home and took the shades off your lamps because you thought the light wasn't just right? So when I talk about light proliferation and planning, that's what I'm talking about. This gives our communities a chance to start that I spent 6 years on one project here in Salem. Thank you.
Thank you all. Any questions for this panel? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Excuse me if I got a little excited there.
You did fine. I have one remaining person on the list, and that's our good mayor, Janet Taylor. Anybody else who would like to speak can sign up.
Mr. Chair, did we have a handout from Mr. Sterba? He referenced it.
We didn't. Madam Mayor.
Yes, thank you. Vice Chair Garrett and committee, thank you for an opportunity to testify again today. The City of Salem does oppose House Bill 2819 for the following three reasons.
First, could I ask you to identify yourself for the record?
Oh, well, goodness, of course.
Thank you.
I should have that training every month, shouldn't I? I'm Salem's Mayor Janet Taylor. I've been a pilot since 1981. I love airplanes, and I'm a big supporter of airports, but I do oppose House Bill 2819. The bill imposes additional planning on cities, but once again with no funding to do the work. It would mandate planning for residential air parks, even in large, densely populated urban areas. And some of the bill's provisions are difficult to interpret, and some duplicate existing law and rules. Let me explain why we feel this way. We already have to meet many, many planning laws and rules for planning studies or updates to our comprehensive plan. Funds for these efforts are very scarce, but we are doing our best to comply with all existing state mandates. There really is no need to add any more requirements. The bill does not include any planning funds for local jurisdictions that would help us implement this bill. But what's even more troubling is it requires cities to plan for residential air parks. As defined in the bill, these air parks would allow pilots to own residences on lots within a public-use airport and taxi in their planes from their homes directly to the runway. It is a really nice amenity if you're a pilot. But it would require the city to determine the density and mix of industrial and commercial uses and residential air parks. The city could not opt out of planning for those air parks. They may be a viable concept in low-density rural areas, but not in a city like Salem. Here, around our airport within the 3-mile radius is much commercial and industrial land that has not been developed. It's at a premium, and it should not have to compete with low-density, single-family residential development for land on the airport. The bill would require the city to demonstrate that our comprehensive plan provides sufficient land to develop within the urban growth boundary for commercial and industrial land for the next 20 years. However, this requirement is already included in statewide Planning Goal 9 and in the Economic Development Rule and serves the overall economic development strategy for the entire city, not just the 3-mile radius around the airport. House Bill 2819 would narrow the analysis to only those commercial and industrial uses and residential air parks that meet transportation needs, not the economic strategy of the community as a whole. Because of this narrow focus, this bill needs a lot more work to reconcile it with the existing statutes and rules. Suffice it to say that the City of Salem opposes this bill in its current form. It needs to be reworked. It should include clearer language that does not conflict with existing statutes and rules. It should be stated as a planning option and not a requirement, and it should apply only to smaller rural jurisdictions. Once again, I thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns with you about House Bill 2819. And I did ask our Assistant Planning Director, Glenn Gross, to come to put in a few words, too.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, and the members of the committee. I think our mayor, as usual, has done a very thorough job explaining the thoughts we have about this bill. I would just add that the City of Salem does have an airport overlay zone that's in place and intended to protect and prevent incompatible land uses around our airport, and we think we're doing an adequate job without this additional requirement. So. With that, I'll say thank you.
Would you please identify yourself?
I'm sorry. I'm Glenn Gross, Planning Administrator for the City of Salem.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Okay.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
That is all the testimony we have for this bill, so we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2819. And that is all the business before us today, so we are adjourned.